It was like Hansen, when Hansen played, never got his kit dirty. It was like he'd come off covering blood and snot and he'd just walk off and basically give his kit to the kit man, said he won't need to wash that this week.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Okay, you're welcome along. I am delighted to welcome Marty Clark back to the show. He is, of course, an all-star, a former Down footballer, a former AFL footballer with Collingwood and involved with the Down under 20 setup this year as well. Marty Clark, how are you getting on? You're very welcome.
Thanks very much. Yeah, delighted to be on. Everything's good with me in the mornings here, so thanks for the invite.
No, great to have you. We might start with what I mentioned there, being involved with the 20s this year. A really exciting backroom team, actually, that you guys had lined up and down this year, and also a really successful summer, as it turned out.
Yeah, it was a brilliant sort of project to get involved in. Conor Lavery, he's obviously, a very smart footballer, but he's a magnificent coach as well, a great passion for Down football. So when I got the call from Conor that he was putting forward a team for the Down under 20s, I was delighted to be asked. I enjoyed working with him, bits and pieces here and there. So to get involved in your own county at any level is exciting. And then when we had Sean Boylan joined the team as well, who's obviously a friend of Connor's and who I've worked with previously, it just added that extra dimension to it. And then we had Declan Morgan and Ronan McCartan as well, two great Down men on board with us. So that was one aspect of it. And then the players as well, really athletic, highly skilled group that we just really wanted to utilise those two aspects of the team. And we were able to win Ulster, which was the goal when we sat down at the start of the year. Unfortunately, we didn't push on. Roscommon got us, deservedly so, on the night in Breffni Park. But look, overall, it was a great campaign for us.
It's interesting when you talk about that assembly of characters and legends of the game in the backroom team. Did you know that this group of under-20s was particularly talented, and that's why you said to yourself, right, okay, we need to make every effort under the sun possible to ensure that we give these kids the best possible chance of success?
No, I don't think that was really a factor. I think once we decided that we were on board, and all five of us in the management team are kind of all-in type characters, it wasn't going to be we'll see how we get on the first year. Connor was particularly optimistic about the group we had. He's very much involved with Kilku underage and followed them right through. But I held my hands up and said to Connor, look, I don't know a lot of these guys, a lot of the clubs, I know individuals here and there. But we agreed that was irrelevant. We wanted to do something slightly different, create really high training standards within the group, test them physically and mentally, and then go about kind of being really consistent in how we wanted to play and how we wanted to plan for the opposition, etc. So I think while it was great that the group did turn out to be capable of kind of maximising what we wanted to do, we didn't go in saying, oh, we'll give this a go because it's a good group. We just kind of wanted to kind of put it in place to kind of give Down football a little bit of respect back that had been lost. And thankfully, the management team and the players kind of gelled well, and ultimately we got that Ulster title.
What was Boylan's role in the whole thing?
Sean was brilliant. He just knows exactly what to do in any circumstance. If there was, training sessions, or, we had six challenge games as well because there was no formal league. If things were maybe a little bit low-key, he was able to come in with a motivational aspect. If Connor or I were hyping a session up too much or being a little bit hard on the players, Sean would be able to calm it down. He sees the game particularly well, reflects on it as well, but just to have his presence there was very important for the whole group, and the commitment he showed was, travelling from Meath, it really just emphasised what we were doing was just something that it was just so enjoyable that you didn't even think about the time and energy you were spending on it. So, yeah, look, it was a pleasure to work side all the guys, but Sean and Connor in particular.
So Sean was basically telling you if you were going too hard on the kids?
It, to an extent, he would be able to calm it down and say, look, we've a few days to the game, or, this is just maybe if there was too much pressure in a situation, where young lads maybe are You know, you don't want to make them apprehensive. You want to make sure that they're serious about their preparation. And he was just brilliant in that respect. We're saying, look, you've done this before with your club, etc. Nothing overly groundbreaking, but it was just the timing and the way he delivered it. I think we all learned a lot from it.
It's really interesting looking at the identity of this year's All-Ireland finalists at senior level and seeing how much those Mayo under-21s and Tyrone under-21s have really come through. That, I think, is it 15 and 16 that they both won All-Ireland titles at under-21 level. Is your sense that that trend is going to continue even though under-21s is now under-20s?
I think it will. I do feel that young kids that are playing the game at the minute, and you have to remember at that under-20, under-21 level, it's kind of the last time in their, I suppose, inter-county careers where they're given, they have the ability with other things generally going on in their lives where they can fully commit to football without the commitments of family, serious jobs, financial issues, things like this. And that's kind of reflected in the atmosphere at training and you know, how enthusiastic they are for every session, because that's the main focus of their day. I know it is at inter-county senior, of course it is, but the older you get, the kind of, particularly within the GA, still being amateur in terms of having to hold down jobs, it can be, it's a brilliant age group, and the very best guys, if they're in the right environment, such as the Mayo, I think, as you said, 2015, Tyrone 2016, it's just then, it is a progression, maybe 2 years at their club, one or two might go straight up to the senior panel. And they just carry that through, that momentum. It adds energy and quality to the senior squad that's already there in both counties. And I think now with how athletic these 20, 21, 22-year-olds are, you're going to see more and more of them playing quickly.
So what is the number one thing for you if you zoom out and look at Down football as a whole when it comes to this generation of footballer? What is the most important thing to ensure that they do transition well and effectively to senior level?
Suppose it's pride in the jersey, what it means sort of to represent Down, based a little bit on the past, you know, the teams of the 60s and the 90s, to be competitive in every game, in every training session that you attend, that it's a big deal, it's important, there's a chance to get better, because there's a number of counties in Ulster that are have been well ahead. You know, Down haven't won an Ulster title at senior level since 1994. So I suppose for me personally, that's the number one goal. But it doesn't just come overnight. It has to be a mindset for players within their clubs that it's every day. Of course, you need downtime, and everyone wants to do that different ways. But every training session it's 100%. It's flat out. There's a purpose. And that gets carried through to every single game, because there has obviously been games at senior level where Down haven't been competitive in recent years, and I know they've kept in Division 2 this year, which is really, really important. But in terms of the Ulster Championship, there's been one or two finals here and there since 94, but never really looked like winning them.
I'm sure from the playing group's perspective then as well, having someone like you around is a great person to have, just because you've shown that it's possible to be a boy wonder and absolutely live up to the hype. I know obviously you go to Australia, but you come back, and even in your short time playing with the senior team for Down, it did show that you did live up to the promise that you showed at underage level. And that promise was exceptional, Marty. Like, just doing a bit of reading before today, is it true that you played minor and under 21 level in the same year?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, 2005, I think that was.
Were you starting for both teams that year?
I did start for both teams in the latter stages. Down got to an All-Ireland under-21 final, lost to Galway, and in the minors we actually beat Mayo in the final in 2005. So yeah, look, I suppose I hope I can have that influence. For me, it was important in terms of, you know, you hear me talk about training standards, day-to-day standards. I think for me, when I went across to Australia, I maybe wasn't the hardest trainer on the Down teams or on the club teams. I knew I had ability. I loved doing everything with the ball, any spare minute I had. Gym probably wasn't really a thing for 18, 19-year-olds back then. And any time I had was to focus on my skills, my left foot, kicking, free kicks, things like that. But when I got to Australia, I'm thinking that, you know, I was a fairly, well-established, quality player. you're put down to earth because you're bottom of the list of AFL talent that's there at Collingwood. So for me, I had to grind and graft every session to show something, to give 100%. And eventually then I was able to get into the best team at Collingwood. And you just carry that with you. And then when I got back to Down, it probably just carried through that, you know, every session's an opportunity. Every meal is an opportunity, every recovery session. And I suppose there's obviously time and the off-season's getting shorter for county players and club players. The split season will probably be important because it is important to physically and mentally switch off from the game. But I do feel you need that level of training standard. You need that mindset of, you know, how can I get better? How can we as a team, as a county, improve?
I get the sense from what you're saying there, Marty, that you didn't necessarily feel that level of expectation that one might feel from being involved at under 21 level, despite being literally underage for minor, being one of the best players of your generation, that it was just pure enjoyment in those early to mid 2000 years, that you didn't really feel the weight of down on your shoulders. Because I guess nowadays, if there's a kid that comes along like that, there is a sense of, okay, come senior time, this guy's gonna help our county get to the promised land. But it didn't seem that you were getting bogged down by that at all.
No, I don't think so. You have to take a lot of that things with an element of, you know, there's always going to be headlines. There was no social media in those days either. There was a lot of good players around me in both squads, under 21s, down minors. And you're just kind of focusing on that opponent every week. And of course, I'm delighted to have been able to entertain, you know, people of Down and to have given them good memories. And I know it was only for a short time as well. But in terms of pressure weighing down on young players and things like that, I think if you do have that simple mindset of, you know, every session, every game, you can improve and you can kind of not let it, you know, take over your mindset.
Like, do you remember those very early years when people are starting to talk about you as somebody who could be an outstanding minor and an outstanding senior for your county? Like, I mean, there's these crazy stories of you scoring 3 goals and 20 points in a single under 14 match, for example. I presume there was a moment in your teens where you start to become aware of the reputation that you had.
Yeah, I think so. Even back then, I think my school, St. Louis Kilkeel, we kind of climbed the ranks from C grade in the Ulster colleges up to the McCrory level, which is obviously elite in Ulster. And along the way, I think maybe it was in one of the B grades, I'd scored 117 in a final as captain. And you do hear the noise around the school and then the county and then maybe outside of that as well. But you know,
how many were frees, Marty, is the question I have to ask here. Everybody's screaming at the radio right now.
No, all from play.
All from play.
as far as I can remember. But but yeah, look, I had my brother as well. John was playing for Down seniors at an early age. And you know as well that once you get to senior level, it is where you're going to be tested. I remember playing for my club at 16. And, you know, that can be humbling as well because you're coming up against grown men who are intelligent, they're crafty in terms of how they're stopping you. They're physically bigger and it can be intimidating as well as a younger player. So, you know, if you are dominating in your own age group, there's always going to be that challenge in Gaelic football because it's actually interesting when I explain to my teammates in Australia that the best players in Ireland go back and play at club level for their local teams, and that can be at junior level. Or whatever it is, and they just can't believe this. They're like, surely these guys dominate like beyond recognition. And I just explained to them that very often it's not the case because of the way they're targeted, because of the way the game is played. It can be hard. Some players represent their county. I'm sure everyone knows guys within their own county where they actually play better in a county jersey than their club jersey, which sounds crazy, but it's kind of just the way it is in club level up and down the country.
That Australian dressing room you mentioned then, that is sometimes the thing that a lot of people find really hard about going to Australia. Not so much the dressing room, but maybe the way of life or just being so far away from home. You are one of these people who, in the first stint, worked out so well for when it comes to the professional game down there. You've mentioned the work ethic already, but when it came to the mental side of things, why did it go so well for you at the start in Australia?
I was supported particularly well. I think most kids that go across, they enjoy the training, they enjoy getting up, going to, you know, if it's a gym session, if it's a pitch session, if it's a game, no matter if it's for the reserves or the first team, that side of the game is what we're there for, and getting paid for that is highly motivational and everything else. It's the time away from the club, you know, those 3-4 days, maybe on a long weekend where your teammates are going, you know, back to their families, and you know, you're there, and yes, it's a beautiful city with climate, but it's your time away from the club after a hard session, after a defeat. Are you going home to an empty house, or what is it? I lived with the family of a guy who worked at the club, and I had brilliant support. I was kind of integrated with Australian society. My teammates were so good to me. There was development coaches there. So that network around me allowed me simply to focus on getting a game in the first team and staying in the team. And it was enjoyable. My experience of kind of the day-to-day life, I was able to maximise that because I had so many good people around me who were kind of doing the difficult things for me, such as washing my clothes and making my dinner, things like this, that might sound trivial, but it certainly can impact some lads that go out and they're living on their own for the first time over there. It's just an extra challenge that's a little too much.
What I always find interesting, Marty, is your decision then to come home. Obviously, it worked out pretty well. Like, the 2010 season is, like, as you say, you've got to go back to the early 90s to find anything that can hold a candle to 2010 from Down Football's perspective. But when it comes to people who do a U-turn on the Australian career, or maybe even just take a break from the Australian career, it tends to happen when things maybe haven't gone so well down there, and we've seen it in many a case, but you seem to be the exception to that, where things were going well, and as you say there, you'd settled in well to Australia. So why was the pull to come home greater than the pull to keep you at home in the first place, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, it does. It was a particularly difficult decision because it was two very much positive options. It was probably like a 55-45 to come home.
Right.
I was in a long-term relationship with my now wife. We have 3 kids, Anna. So that was back then. Obviously, I didn't say that because it would have put a lot of pressure on me. Thankfully, it's worked out. And, you know, we're happily married, living in Newcastle here. That had a big influence. I was 22, 23. Anna was finishing her medical degree at the time, so we kind of needed to make a decision there. But outside of that, it was, you know, it was the draw of going home to play for Down. You know, at the time, Ross Carr was manager, and Ross was kind of speaking to me, and unfortunately for him, he didn't end up staying in the job when I did come back. But it was kind of that draw of while I loved Australian rules, and it was a great career in terms of financially, I wasn't the main player. I wasn't playing a role where I felt I was maximising my sporting ability. It was more I was playing a defensive role at times. I was often offloading the ball onto more skilled teammates, and that kind of you know, didn't really sit well with me, because I knew moving forward I fully accepted that, you know, my kick in an AFL wasn't going to be as good as the top 4, 5, 6 players on the team, and I wanted to come home and try and dominate in the GAA if I could, and see where I could help the Down team get to.
Anna is Australian, I presume.
No, Anna's Irish. Yeah.
Sorry,
Anna's,
so you met her in Australia and then you moved back together. Is it that was the decision you had to make?
Yeah, it was. We were going out before I went across in 2006,
right.
And then any of my off season I spent with her, and she flew out in her holidays from university and things like that. So and then she ended up coming back out across with me at the end of 2011. So bit of a story there, but thankfully that side of it all worked out.
Yeah,
or at least I say thankfully. Anna might say different.
Yeah, that was certainly a big factor, it seems, from the whole thing. I didn't realise that. So that period then when you managed to, I guess, seamlessly slot back into Gaelic football, to put it bluntly, that season of 2010, I've probably already alluded to it as a positive thing. I'm interested in your take on it, though. Is it a positive year in your mind? Somebody with that winning mentality, obviously it is defeat ultimately in the All-Ireland final. So is it a disappointing year overall, or do you look at it in the greater scheme of things and say, well, what else have Down done over the last 25 years?
I think if you look at the longer it goes, the defeat to Cork hurts more and more. That opportunity that was there, that side of it is never really going to leave any of that panel in 2010. But as you said, the overall big picture, the journey that we went on that year, how positive that was for the county and the people within the county, even the under 20 squad. That I was involved with this year. Those guys were 9, 10, 11 years of age back then. So that was a big thing in their passion for Down growing up. So overall, it was a very happy year, a very positive year. For myself, I look back with it, you know, with fondness. It was great weather. They were brilliant Down jerseys, even if you see old photos and stuff. Got to play at Croke Park 5 or 6 times that season. Yeah, look, overall positive, but of course, especially with All-Ireland final coming around again now in a couple of weeks, it's difficult because you can never say you've won one, and we were close, you know.
And your own perspective on that final, I mean, am I right in saying it was Noel O'Leary who picked you up, and maybe that was a bit of a shock on the day from your perspective? Like, do you look back on that and say, God, I wish we'd some other plan other than the one to allow a man follow me around the entire length and breadth of Croke Park for the entire afternoon?
Yeah, and I think because it was a novel final as well, we, like Mayo are now this season, we were playing in Division 2. We hadn't played Cork in the Championship since 1994, I think. Those matchups, they were very much, we were guessing. O'Leary was rampaging that year. He was a good footballer going forward as well. So didn't really see it coming. And that could be a factor with Tyrone and Mayo. I know they played in the league in October 2020 in an important game. So maybe we get some clues to the matchup surge. But in terms of our own matchups and the O'Leary one and Shields going to Benny Coulter, we probably didn't predict them. I suppose you could say those two boys got the better of Benny and myself, and that had a big factor in the game.
What do you do in that situation? Because you're right, it's going to be a massive talking point in the build-up to the final, because nobody really has any clue who's going to mark who. And I think even in the context of last Saturday, not a whole pile of people would have seen Conor Myler picking up Paddy Clifford and smothering him for the entire game. Probably one of the most successful matchups Tyrone have ever picked. So what would you do if you were in Paddy Clifford's shoes on Saturday, or if you had your time back in 2010? What would you do when you're in that situation?
I think, firstly, just on the Tyrone-Kerry game, I think the 6-goal game that I think was in the middle of June. Can you imagine what Tyrone must have taken out of that in terms of learning for this game moving forward? Yes, of course, there was an element of, you know, that psychological, the revenge, this hurt us so much. But to actually be able to see how Kerry scored 6 goals against them this season, what matchups worked, what matchups didn't work, where did the damage come from? The majority of those 6 goals, in fact, all of them came from central regions. And for whatever reason, Tyrone were particularly open that day. Kerry moved the ball extremely cleanly by foot and by hand and were clinical in front of goal. I know the Niall Morgan lob one from a kick out, it was probably the outlier, but the other 5 were really well worked moves through the central channel. So you can imagine then the body of evidence that Tyrone had to kind of work on to say, right, we need to block out this area and we need to change these matchups and we need X on Ganey. Clifford did this try Myler. It was such an advantage for Tyrone because they were brave enough and courageous enough to look at it in that light. You win or you learn. And they learned so much from that. And I suppose to answer your initial question, what could Clifford have done? Could he have got more help from his teammates, a shoulder here and there? Could he have ran? You can't run Conor Myler because he's so fit. Mm. It probably needed to be a block from a teammate, a shoulder, something to try and get him into space, or just pass him the ball, even if Myler's right on him, just give it to him. He'll make something happen. And potentially, you know, that's answering the same question about O'Leary and myself. But at the end of the day, those two guys won the matchups, Myler and O'Leary, and it was key on those particular days.
So you basically need a teammate to come in and clean out your man for you?
In a respect, yeah. Certainly something they focus on in Australia. Right. If your best player is getting tagged, it's your duty to be physical on that opponent. There's more leeway in it in Australian rules. There's more stoppages. The physical contact is much more legal in that respect. But if you're Conor Myler being sent out to tag Paddy Clifford and you've had a good start, the Kerry players are going to make sure that they're getting Clifford free. And they're doing that by physical means. But you know, it's easier said than done. But do the best players in Gaelic get enough kind of protection at county and club level from their teammates if and when they need it? Obviously, the best players should be able to fight their own battles. But every now and then you need a teammate or two to try and help you along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems that way. Marty, we had you on the show, I think it was probably 4 years ago at this point. I think it was the summer of 2017. You were talking to Ger one of the nights, and you were talking about a couple of tough years you'd had since around 2014 when you'd been diagnosed with Addison's disease. How has that been over the last little while for you as somebody who's had to give up high-level sport as a result of it, as a normal human being trying to go about each day? How has your life been?
Yeah, it's been good, thank you. Probably in a much better position now in terms of my life. I think coming back from Australia, generally, you know, the Irish boys, the vast majority of us that come home not wanting to. My second time, that was certainly the case. Obviously, I got diagnosed with Addison's. I didn't get my contract renewed. That's a difficult thing to deal with mentally. You've lost your career. I didn't have a career path in mind immediately, like many of the guys. And you do struggle to fit back into society in terms of, you know, I was away for 6 years. I know I was home for that year and a bit, but kind of working out, what am I going to do? Will I go to university? Small day-to-day things like, you know, you've built up all your contacts in Australia. So if you need a plumber, if you need the car fixed, you know, you have to build up all these different little connections. It seems so simple, but it takes time, and it probably took me 4 or 5 years to do so. And certainly now, you know, I think we're home 6 years. It's a much, you know, easier way of life. The condition itself, I'm able to manage it with medication and things like that. So, you know, overall, I feel definitely in a much better position now than maybe the last time we chatted.
What is Addison's disease for people who don't know?
It's a rare disease that affects the adrenal glands. So essentially the body doesn't produce cortisol. So, you know, the thing where in a big event in life or sport, whatever it is, you get that little injection every morning. And when you wake up, people who don't have Addison's disease, i.e. the majority of the population, get that release of cortisol. And there's a few other factors as well. But thankfully, we're able to replace it. People with Addison's are able to replace it with hydrocortisone daily, and it doesn't really impact, you know, thankfully, my life too much. I know there are other people who maybe struggle a bit more with it, various different degrees of it, but thankfully for me, you know, it's around fatigue and different things like that, and if you're on well, like colds and vomiting bugs and stuff, it can be quite serious quite quickly, but thankfully I'm married to a doctor, so I can rest easy most of the time.
I presume that puts you on a bit more high alert when a global pandemic breaks out.
You'd think.
Yeah.
But generally, we've been pretty good. Certainly at the start, there was a lot of unknown, I'm sure, as there was for everyone in the world. But thankfully, I don't think it's kind of been too big a factor, or it's been, you know, too much more complications related to the pandemic.
That's good to hear. And like, has it? Like, the obvious one is it ends your sporting career. But in your day to day life, does it change what you can and can't do at all?
I don't feel it does. Maybe it's just me. You know, not letting it. I feel that I'm able to particularly with working from home and things like that now, I've been able to get back into the Mourns to run, to, you know, train. I did some of the sessions. Connor and I jump in with the under-20s from time to time. And I was able, you're able to do that. So I feel that I'm quite fortunate in that respect, that it hasn't really impacted me too much.
Am I right in saying you were 29 when you got the diagnosis?
I think it was maybe 26.
Right, okay.
Yeah. As far as I know, it was 26. So you're fairly young, and it generally affects kind of people maybe in that, you know, 50 years of age. Obviously, it can affect everyone, but it was a bit of a shock at the time and things to accept, and then it contributed to losing the career. But I've met a lot of people who have the condition or have children who have the condition and whatnot, and you know, it's just great to chat to them and tell them my story and that it's not the end of the world if there is a diagnosis there.
And having been through that whole period now of, I guess, coming to terms with the fact that you wouldn't play competitive sport again and getting back into competitive sport as a coach with down under 20s, how do you reflect on that period, those days of being 26 and being told by a doctor that you really shouldn't be playing competitive sport anymore when you should be coming to your peak at that point?
Yeah, that was a tough period for me because it probably took about 4 months for the diagnosis to come true, which anyone who's listening that has had anyone that's been diagnosed, that's a very quick diagnosis. Generally, it can take several months to years. So it really impacted my performances. I was dropped to the reserves after the first game of the season in 2014. The harder I tried, the worse I felt, the more that was reflected on my output on the field. And you were getting heckled from the crowd saying, go back to Ireland. The coaches and the senior teammates were saying, because they knew like part of my game was work rate, but it literally looked, if you were looking at me, that, you know, I wasn't trying. And obviously I'm saying, oh, I'm not feeling well, but, you know, it was really difficult for me. And when the diagnosis came, as concerning as it was because it was a rare condition, I was relieved that it wasn't in my head because that was starting to filter in as well. But the support I had from Anna and the doctor at Collingwood at the time, a guy called Peter Pequi, who did all the investigations, who had the faith in me that this was something physical, even though it was so subtle what was going on with the blood and the different symptoms that presented. So, look, overall, it was, of course, disappointing, but there's a lot worse things it could have been, and a good enough innings in the GAA and AFL at the elite level to accept it.
And is being involved with a pretty high level team this summer giving you that competitive drug once again? Is this like the first time you're starting to feel that going through your blood at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. It really did. I really enjoyed working alongside that standard, you know, that standard of player. And even when you get to training, you know that you're going to have a full squad. You know, there's not going to be, you know, the excuses that sometimes can occur at a club level and different things. You know, you've got a group of players that have bought in, and you're winning games and you're reviewing games and you're preparing for the opposition. It was a brilliant, we had brilliant weather as well, and we trained because the Centre of Excellence isn't there in town. We trained in all different venues throughout the county, and you know, it was really, really enjoyable. And as you said, it was great to get back at that level in that capacity.
And what sort of personality is Marty Clark on the sideline? Is he the cool, calm, calculated guy, or is he the kicking every ball with his team sort of coach?
I'm the latter, unfortunately. but I had 3 years with a club in Down, St. John's, that my brother played for, based outside Castle Allen. So I learned a lot in that role. I've learned to calm down a little bit and try not to kick every ball as much. And certainly being in a backroom team rather than the main man for the under-20s, while maybe some people are still saying I'm kicking every ball, I'm certainly trying to analyse a lot more. And I think that in-game decision-making is still the number one challenge in GAA, as it is in most elite sports. But I think the preparation's great, and you've got your video, and we plan to do this on kickouts. But when things aren't going right or things are going well, how do you change them? How do you get that across? That's the biggest challenge. And it's something that kind of, you know, I took a lot out of working with Conor and Sean Boylan this year.
I can imagine. One last thing then, Marty, as somebody who's, I guess, been involved in a pretty incredible under 20 championship this summer, where, I mean, Down versus Roscommon is relatively novel on one side of the draw. Offaly winning the whole thing was extremely novel, and they were brilliant scenes at the full time whistle. We're seeing a senior football final, which we've never seen before, in Mayo versus Tyrone. It does seem that we're right on the edge of the beginning of a really energetic, unknown sort of decade, perhaps, of Gaelic football. Is that way too optimistic outlook on just one year, or do you share that?
I think we have to be optimistic. I think it's brilliant. Yeah. I think the Offaly journey, you know, we were desperate to kind of get to Croke Park. Once we had beaten Monaghan, we were desperate. We knew the prize, Offaly and Croke Park. It would have been, you know, it was a huge prize. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get there because their journey, much like Roscommon's, was unexpected. And, you know, they certainly played a really entertaining brand. And it was the gap freedom I mentioned that under-20s can have because of their ability to give everything in their lives to it, and certainly they deserve that title. You know, the first ever time Mayo and Tyrone in a final as well. You know, it's a long time since both teams have won it, obviously longer for Mayo, as their fans will not need reminded. But yeah, look, I think, is Dublin's dominance going to disappear overnight? No, of course it's not. They lost a game after extra time. That they could have won, and we would have been talking about them in the final. Kerry will learn so much from that defeat as well. And then you've a number of other teams that have been around, and hopefully that will come again. So look, if this is the start of the decade of what we're going to see, long may it continue.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hopefully a good few years ahead for Gaelic football. You've been listening to Marty Clark, by the way, for the last little while. He is, of course, involved with the Down Under 20s. He is an all-star, former Down footballer and a former AFL footballer with Collingwood. Marty, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks so much. All the best now.